All right, we've got a fun weekend preview style episode, which we haven't done in a while. It's Dylan, it's Nico. As always, intro music, here we go. Hello and welcome to today's episode of Side Retired. It is Friday, March 22nd. Technically, we forgot to wish you guys happy opening day because that almost snuck up on everyone and happened without people realizing because the Dodgers and the San Diego Padres have officially 160 games left in the season. Both of them are 1-1. Those Korean games counted for people who might not have realized that. But Nico, how you doing? And happy late opening day.
Thank you, bro. I mean, we talk about how we watch a ton of baseball. So you would expect that guys like us woke up, watched those games. I know Dylan did. I can tell you who didn't. I did, not gonna lie. Did watch him though, ended up watching him after. But I mean, 6 o'clock in the morning is tough.
We even made plans. Our audience might not care about this, but we were texting the night before about, hey, 6 a.m.
Time
watch
out, time out.
party. Let's do it. We were texting at 1 in the morning, so it was going to be
Yeah,
a quick turnaround for Nico.
this was not the back and forth. It was like, hey, want to come at 6 a.m. to watch the game? I go, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, Dylan. He's like, so I'm here, I'm watching it. I'm like, yeah, I would have to go to yours to watch it. But yeah, I saw the temperature. I woke up at 5 in the morning, saw the temperature, saw the time, and I'm like, I have a class at 9. I'm not doing this.
But we do have, obviously, we both, whether you've watched the highlights, whether you've watched the games, there were some things to talk about. Obviously, there was the weird play with Jake Cronenworth. The ball went through his glove, I guess you can call it, and that's how the Padres lost game one. But of course, they rebounded for 15 runs in game two. Yoshinobu Yamamoto stunk. The Dodgers offense is really good. So is Jackson Merrill. A lot of different topics. Nico, we'll do the first half of this episode talking about the two games. And then we've also got a couple other things, such as the JD Martinez signing and the new second base slide rule that we'll get into at the end. But Nico just texted me. I have a bit of a rant. So floor's yours.
Yeah. There is a person on MLB Network. I'm pretty sure he's still on MLB Network that now is also on ESPN. And every time I hear him on ESPN, I think the same thing. Why does this guy get an hour of time on MLB Network?
This mad dog.
Mad Dog Russo knows nothing about baseball. It's terrible. It's terrible. High Heat, I'm gonna be honest, sucks. Like, if you listen to First Take, we're here listening. Jake Cronenworth, they're showing the replay of the ball going through Jake Cronenworth's glove. And I'm like, oh, yeah, they're gonna. And Mad Dog Russo goes, you gotta make that play. The play's gotta be made. What are we talking about? Like, we get mad at like guys like Skip Bayless for like saying outlandish stuff. But this is a guy who gets an hour of airtime to talk specifically about baseball. And he can't do the due diligence of noticing that one of the biggest plays of the game was because a glove got broken. He's just like, ah, no, plays got that's terrible. And we give this guy an hour and we see him again with MLB Network being the only being the TV network for baseball. We give him an hour of our day. We give him a great percentage, 5% of our day. I understand in 5% doesn't seem like a lot. For talk shows, when you think about a 24-hour day, it's a good amount of time. We give him time in our day to talk to us about baseball. And he doesn't even do the due diligence when, again, when you're on ESPN coming from MLB Network, you should be a baseball guy. And you can't even get through your thick skull and see that Jake Cronenworth couldn't get. That's terrible. It pissed me off so much when I heard that.
I know Mad Dog has been into the news for Major League Baseball lately, where there's also the whole he was going to retire if the Diamondbacks beat the Phillies and they beat the Phillies. Mad Dog, I will say, is a New York guy. I do have a little bias. I like him. Mike and the Mad Dog, that's been one of the most
Like he
iconic.
doesn't pay attention to baseball.
I think he does. I think he's just old school, and I don't think he saw the replay. And as much as it's not a good thing,
But he's a baseball guy. My whole thing is if you're a baseball guy and we're talking about the biggest play of the game. Again, if you're talking about the game that the play that everyone remembers of that game, it's that play. Like it's not very hard. Like, dude, even if you like, I'm sorry. Notes of the game. Like when me and you were on this before and we're talking about notes of the game, first thing was like, yeah, went through Cronenworth's glove. obvious. Like, how are we just like? It just puts on a terrible light for like baseball commentators
It
because
does.
he's a guy that's a guy on MLB Network. He has an hour on MLB Network to himself.
Yes. It's not a good look. But thoughts on the series other than Chris Russo? I think the biggest thing for me, and I know it's to go back to our segment that we've done all spring, I don't mean to overreact, but Yamamoto stunk all spring. And then yesterday, or technically two, I don't, depending on when this is released, it wasn't pretty. Everything was hard hit. His command was all over the place. He didn't even make it out of the first inning. I believe the total was 42 pitches, if I think
He
my
finished the
math
first.
is right. He finished the first inning, but didn't throw a pitch in the second and threw 42 pitches to get through that first inning. And it just was not a good outing at all. The Baseball Savant numbers have not come out yet. I'm not sure actually if they will or will not based on it being in a different stadium and atmosphere, but 5 runs in your first big league inning is not a good start to your career.
Yeah, I mean, one inning, four hard hit balls again. Even if you look at some of the stuff, yeah, some of it was kind of what we saw at the beginning of spring training where infield's not like new best, but still just a terrible outing. I mean, even we're gonna get to him maybe a little later and touch on him because I feel like he deserves respect. But Jackson Merrill, I mean, just a terrible chase, saved an inning for him. I think that he looked really bad. I think that again, I still have the opinion of like not being the way that a lot of people feel about Yamamoto, about his contract and stuff like that. I think that there is a lot more risk, and I think that we're seeing it now. But what I will say is on Yamamoto, it's his first start. Again, another problem. We'll probably get to this about the series. We're still a week away from actual opening day. And I think that, again, I really see this as, yes, it technically will count towards its stats and towards standings. It's a spring training start for him. I mean, look, we've seen guys who have hit abysmally and been great. We've seen guys who have pitched abysmally and been great. We've seen guys who have hit, I mean, who have done good and done well. Like, I'm not gonna go and put all my eggs in one basket that he's a bust or anything like that, but definitely, like, we gotta see what happens because we thought that he was gonna transition very well into the bigs. A lot of people were thinking that. Just from the first couple things, like it does not seem like that adjustment's going to be as easy as everyone thought.
No, look at the, and even if you look at just the inning of, oh, maybe it got lucky. No. Single to begin the game, 106 miles an hour off the bat from Bogaerts. Hit by pitch, triple 103 miles an hour. Walk, sac fly that went 360 feet. Profar strikes out. Camposano gets a double. Tyler Wade gets a 97 mile an hour fastball for, or gets a exit velocity of 97 miles an hour. And then Jackson Merrill struck out, and that was the end of the inning. But the guys that hit, hit. The other thing worth monitoring was the velocity. Fastball starts off 97 miles an hour, and then it started ticking down as the inning went on. Now, maybe that's just because, you know, you throw 40 pitches in an inning, you get tired, but worth seeing what happens in start number two with him. Just raising some red flags, realizing that it's not as simple as everyone thought it was going to be of he was the Cy Young in Japan, so now he's going to be the Cy Young of Major League Baseball. That doesn't always happen.
Also, another thing, again, and I feel like, oh, it's weird that, like, I hate when, like, you defend, which I think he's going to be good, but I wasn't very high on him coming into the year, as some people were, like, on end rankings. One thing to note, everyone pitched bad. No one pitched
Yeah.
well. That's just an overarching thing. No one really went, and you're like, wow, that guy shoved. I think Glasnow went 5 innings, but he had a couple walks, was low on Ks. I think that this was just a bad pitching day. That again, we see that a lot with international games. International games are slugfest from the start. I remember the London series, one of the first international series. I believe it was like 17-8 and 12-10 or something like that. Like with the Red Sox and Yankees. Again, there's a lot of things you can chalk it up to, apart from Yamamoto just being a bust. There's a lot of, again, that's not saying that we shouldn't keep an eye on him. When you're getting paid the highest pitching contract in history by a guy who only pitches, you're going to get put under a microscope. I don't care where you get from. I don't care if it's your first, second, third, or 100th start. Every single start's under a microscope when you're the highest paid pitcher.
Yeah, especially when Gerrit Cole had been the pillar of consistency as the highest starting pitcher in the last 5 years. And obviously, now that he's out, spotlights entirely on Yamamoto. And yeah, it was a four pitch mix of a fastball, splitter, cutter, curveball, and everything was getting hit no matter where or what it was thrown. But positives. Jackson Merrill, welcome to the show. Starting center fielder for San Diego Padres, hit ninth this weekend. I assume they're likely going to keep him there to start the year, just getting his feet wet. But seems like, again, Nico's going to criticize me because I said the Padres offense wasn't good and then they put up 15 runs. They're still not, because Jerickson Profar, Luis Camposano, and Tyler Wade as your 6, 7, and 8 hitters is not going to get it done in a normal situation. And we're going to get to it in a second. The one big bat left in free agency is now gone in JD Martinez. So this is likely the Padres team, but, you know, they weren't as bad as I might have thought they were. But again,
yeah.
I don't want to overreact.
Big thing to look at is, look, exactly what you said. You the same way that you could chalk up a lot of what the pitching had to the series and it being an international series and the ballpark and stuff. Same thing with the lineups. Again, like, you're not, Mookie's not going to hit 667 the whole year, obviously. Like, we're just not, that's not something. But it was nice to see that that bottom of the order did actually perform. Obviously, I don't know how long that's going to last. But the bigger thing, again, Jackson Merrill. One thing that we're talking about, Jackson Merrill went 0 for his first game. Every single out was a hard hit ball. He went 0 for 3 with 3 hard hit balls. Very good thing to see. He's hitting the ball hard. Again, a lot of him coming up had a lot of hype and also a lot of question marks because of his short sample size in the minor leagues. But it looks like, you know, he's just a ball player. It looks like he's going to be able to, you know, just hit balls hard. And the big thing is that he's going to have the freedom to do whatever he wants at the nine hole. He's going to be able to go develop. Again, people are going to want to pitch to him because they're not going to want to face Bogarts and Tatis. The fact is, those two guys behind him, it's going to help him a lot. He's going to face a lot more righties because, again, with matchups, it's going to be like, are we going to face Merrill, or are we going to put a lefty against Merrill, or are we going to have Bogarts and Tatis with the righty? He's going to have a lot of righty-lefty matchups. That's going to help him a lot. I think he's going to do great. This seems like the bottom of the order for the Padres. Yes, you can have like that international stuff. I think with Jackson Merrill that maybe, again, I don't think he's going to burst onto the scene and be like MVP caliber first year. But I think that this guy, it seems like it's a lot more of what's to come, that he's just going to be a nice mainstay and hopefully solve their problems, the question marks that we've had at the bottom of the order.
Another Padres rookie I'd like to shout out, Yuki Matsui. The results might not have been there, stood out this weekend, but curveball spinning at 3,000 RPM. Vertical break was 46 inches. So just saying, he knows how to spin a baseball, and give him a couple times to develop, and that could be a really devastating pitch, especially given that the Padres don't really have a set closer right now. It could be Robert Suarez. I know they acquired Woosuck Go this offseason, and he got demoted to AAA after a really bad spring, so who knows if Yuki Matsui takes over that job for all you fantasy baseball players out there. But on the American home front tonight, the New York Mets, who have not had a designated hitter in ages, in fact, probably have never had a designated hitter, given the fact that it's new to the league, and they've bounced between J.D. Davis and Dom Smith and Darren Ruff and Daniel Vogelback, and this year is going to be Mark Vientos. Steve said that's not happening. And he acquired a guy that Nico's very familiar with and is one of the more pure and professional hitters in Major League Baseball. And J.D. Martinez is the new 4-5 hitter in the New York Mets lineup, and I think it makes them a lot better.
Yeah, I think one of the things, you said it, professional. I think the better term for him, from what I've experienced with him on the Red Sox, is he's one, I would say he's the most cerebral hitter in the MLB. The way that he understands, again, I'm not going to sit here and say that he's the best hitter in the MLB, but the way that he understands hitting and understands a swing is great for him for the clubhouse, for the Mets. I think especially when we're talking about guys who the Mets wish would develop faster than they have, like Vientos and Beatty, having a guy like JD who just understands the swing so well because of how much work and time he's put into his swing, being able to just, you know, have that for some guys. I remember, like, just, I feel like once a month when he was on the Red Sox, I would hear one guy talk about, yeah, JD Martinez helped me with this, and this is why I'm hitting well. He saw this in my swing. He saw this in how I was doing something. Having that in the locker room where, again, you know this when you're playing baseball, like, you feel like you have something, but at the end of the day, like some guys just see it better than you do because they're not at the plate and they're like, hey, I kind of see this in your swing. Having a guy who understands so much about pitch selection, about hitting, just about the swing, about everything that has to do with being at the plate to help those young guys that you want to see. Again, the big failure that the Mets have had lately is that they've had these guys coming up and they just haven't panned out like Vientos and Beatty. Having a guy like JD is going to be huge because again, I'm not a Mets fan. I don't know much about Pete or Lindor or guys like that, but I feel like JD's in an echelon of his own. In a tier of his own, and him, hopefully, not only is he going to be a good spot in the lineup and he's going to rake because, again, he seemed to quell all the haters last year. He did really well last year with the Dodgers. It seems like not only is he going to be great in that cleanup spot or that five hole, he's going to be great for the younger guys too. And I think the whole lineup could get better because of it.
It fits the mold of the Mets offseason. And I know there's people that are saying the Mets offseason has been underwhelming, but it's been a lot of 1 to 2 year contracts to see if we could compete in 2024. And if not, at the deadline, you trade them all away. I guarantee you right now, if the Mets are well below 500 and they're going to have that sell off, obviously Pete's going to be the guy that most people call about, but JD Martinez will be a hot commodity at the trade deadline. We've seen it in the past when he got traded to the Diamondbacks and ended up being their god and carrying them to the playoffs a couple of years ago. Someone will be interested in the bat. Whether that remains to be seen with the New York Mets or not, we'll figure out that in the long run. But I will say the stats are there for him. xWOBA, I don't know what that means. 91st percentile.
I believe it's
xSlug,
expected weighted on base percentage.
well, his expected slugging is 96%. His exit velocity is 98%. His barrel percentage is 98%. His hard hit percent is 98%. His sweet spot is 97%. His James Tausig loves this stat. Batting runs value is 93rd%. That's a good hitter.
It's
You
an
don't need
absolute
to know
great hitter.
analytics to know that one.
He's a great hitter. And the thing about him is, again, he's going to age a lot better than most guys age. Again, I think he's already what, 36 years old, but it seems like he's still at like 32 and he just had maybe a down couple years because
And
of
they weren't
how
even that bad.
exactly they weren't bad. They were more just like slow months that kind of like he would kind of slow down a little bit in the summer, like me again, seeing him being our DH for a couple years. But his swing and just how he operates is going to age so well. Like you're going to see him be able to be again. Good for the Mets. He's gonna be great for the Mets this year. Next year, if he stays with the Mets or gets traded to another team or signs with another team, I think he's gonna be great with that team because his swing is just so methodical and so like not like he is athletic, obviously. He's able to put the ball 450 feet, but it has nothing to do with like just his athleticism generated power. It just has everything to do with how much he understands it. So again, I think this is a great signing because it's always good to have that balance of guys who are just physical specimens. Like it seemed like Pete Alonso. If like not calling him, he went to UF, Florida's a good school. It's not to call him dumb, but like it seems like he's just like, I'm going up there and I'm mashing the ball. Whereas JD Martinez takes a way more like academic approach to the swing. And I think that's a good balance to have because again, there's some people who need to know, be told, hey, just try and hit the ball as hard as possible, which Pete's very good at telling people that, I'm sure, because that's what he does on a daily basis. And then there's some guys where it's like, yo, you have this fat hole in your swing. Here's how you can fix it. Having that balance in the locker room, I think, is going to be great for the line.
I think to put it bluntly, the Mets have needed power in their lineup. And there's hope that Francisco Alvarez is that. And obviously, Pete Alonso hits 30 home runs every year. But if I were to tell you that in 10-year span, since 2015 to 2024, technically it's only 9 years, but we're going with 10 because that's the research that I did before this episode. In fact, I could even go to 2014 if I want to just prove
No,
my
just stick
point as
with it.
I stall a quick second.
Just stick with this team.
Okay,
You
stick with it. Other than Pete, only three Mets have hit 30 or more home runs in a span of. So, in the last 10 years, three guys have hit 30 or more home runs for the New York Mets in 10 years, other than Pete. Cespedes 1 year, Michael Conforto 1 year, and then Lindor last year. I'm fairly confident in saying that if JD Martinez plays a full year, he's going to get that number as well. So, good signing.
Great signing. Again, I'm a little biased because I love JD. Just for every reason, works out of Miami with the Red Sox, was there for the ring. But yeah, I gotta agree. Love the signing.
All right, last topic of the night. Why was Francisco Lindor called for obstruction?
I hate it. this weird, like, the thing that gets me upset is that you're putting umpires, a group of people who are already just, I'm not gonna say maligned because a lot of what we say is true, like, just beaten to a pulp every single day, every single game for 6 months, and you're making it more difficult for them. Like this rule that of like obstruction, like the throw clearly beat him, but because like his foot was there and he didn't have a clear slide to the base, it was obstruction. Like, you're just making these plays, which again, all these stuff we have to understand is judgment. Like, this isn't something that like it's very easy to just review because it's like very like niche. You're just making it more easy. You're just making it way easier for people to get mad at a group of people who everyone already hates. I mean, look, I'm not one of those people who is like, get the robot umpires in here. I'm not, but I umpires do suck. I'm more of the, it's a part of the game. But at the same time, if you want any chance to stay with human umpires, you gotta make their job simpler. Having these just like weird judgment call plays that are just so vague and just so hard to interpret is just gonna make them get slandered more. And if you're any guy who like hates robot umpires and hates that challenge rule, I wouldn't go that far that I am, but if you're one of those guys, you have to hate this rule because it's only gonna make you get more upset at umpires.
It makes no s like I understand the whole like the Buster Posey rule of don't block the plate until you have the ball, but that's not what this was. This was a weird like because his foot is in the way that's called obstruction, and I don't know about you, but as an infielder, I've always been taught block the base. So
Yeah,
you're
like it.
literally telling them what you've learned throughout your career, because that's not also like you're not going to injure someone by putting your foot in front of the base. It's not like. Buster Posey, I somewhat got that rule of hey, let's not cause catchers
Reduce
concussions
the thing
every
you were
week.
reducing with Buster Posey, it was not a he's gonna get spiked. What you were trying to get was, yeah, we don't want our catchers to get put in a football play every single play at home, where it's just one guy running down the field going to truck him. Like, I understand that those collisions aren't happening at second base. And the thing is, so many ways, like you said, so many ways that infielders are taught to cover second base, all of them have to do in some way with like obstructing the base, whether like you have your foot there, or some people are taught to straddle the bag. Is straddling the bag an obstruction? Because literally your whole body's there. So like the runner could get scared and not want to. Like, there's so many interpretations of this rule that it can go wrong. And like you said, I think the biggest thing, it's just not needed. Like, what was this rule made for?
I don't even remember this rule. Apparently it was a new rule this off season. I don't remember it ever being voted or anyone talking about it, but now it's appeared. I note as watching the Mets as closely as I do, I saw it happen today, but then I looked it up. It has happened earlier in the spring as well. I forgot what game that was in, but seeing this game while we were on the baseball bus down to Ohio, and I was like, wait, why is he safe? He was out by a mile. And then they got on the phone and they say that it's because Lindor's foot was in the way.
Yeah, and also, like, how does this rule interact with, again, other rules at second base? Like, one of the most known rules about double plays and about plays at second is you have an arm's length. As long as you're able to get to the bag, you're able to slide about a human body length in between the second base. You have kind of a human body to the left and human body to the right. So if I slide and he's in my lane, but I'm not obstructing the base, I'm impeding him from sliding. But I'm technically not covering the base. What goes on there? If the guy's outright going, if I choose that, I mean, you're impeding the guy from sliding, but at the same time, so like you're breaking one, technically one part of the rule, but you're not breaking another part. It's just, again, there's so much confusion. And I think it's a not needed rule that's confusing for a group of people that when we've given them simple things like, hey, call balls and strikes, we have guys like Angel Hernandez who can't do it right.
That is true, but that pretty much wraps up what we wanted to talk about. Depending on what happens the rest of this week, you might have a fun episode coming your way on Monday because, as I just mentioned, I'm on the road Sunday night, so I will not be recording Sunday night. Confirmed already. We don't get back till 3 in the morning, and I don't want to hold Nico responsible for recording a podcast at 3 in the morning. So you could get Nico's first solo ride.
Love to see
You
it.
could get an interview. You could get Nico pulls a familiar face out of nowhere, and that's the interview. We could. I don't even know what the other options
We put
are.
a
Just.
poll. Maybe let's put something out. Maybe we should put something out on the socials, like, "Hey, Nico's manning his first solo. What
What
should he
should we
talk about?"
do?
And see what the guys respond. I'm down to talk about anything. Again, I've told Dylan, when Dylan first asked me like if I wanted to join the podcast, I'm like, "Dylan, we already talk baseball for an hour every single day. The only difference is I'm doing with a Zoom camera in front of me. I'm down to talk about whatever. So whatever people want me to talk about, I'm down for."
Alrighty, so maybe check out the Side Retired Instagram, the Twitter at Side Retired Pod. Let us know what Nico should talk about on Sunday night. But we have a great couple of interviews lined up for next week, talking some Yankees baseball, talking some Mets baseball. It'll be officially opening day, which means that I will tell you right now, our Friday episode of next week is going to be bold predictions time. We'll be giving you our MVPs, our World Series, and everything in between. So you'll be hearing from all four of us, myself, Nico, James, and Henry on that one. Which means I need to plan at this point. When are we actually going to record that to get all four of us in the Zoom? Because it seems like that's impossible to do at this point. But fun times ahead. We didn't discuss the elephant in the room in the baseball room because obviously that's a tricky situation. So we're here to acknowledge that we know it occurred, but we're going to stay clear of it for now. But for Dylan and Nico, until the next time, the side is retired.